We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
With it being the first day of pads, what stood out first and foremost, guys did a really great job of just staying up off the ground. I want guys to still be able to protect each other. We're still teammates. Understand we want to play physical football, but we got to protect each other. I thought our guys came out, did a really good job of that. And you can see our running backs really running the football, how it will look, playing physical behind their pass. I thought those guys, Chubb, did a really good job today with a couple runs, also Jawar. So, and our defense as well, had they stepped up, played physical, nice, a couple nice thuds, nice tackles in there. So I'm excited. First day of pads, everybody was safe. That's my So I'm happy to get out clean today.
All right, welcome in, everybody, on a Tuesday. That was DeMeco Ryans talking following yesterday's first padded practice for the Texans out here live at Texans training camp. It is day six. I believe we're getting another padded practice today. So, DeMeco, laying it out there, run game. I think the fact that he's citing the run game is a tell. And I think it's funny, too, Seth, as we welcome you in here on a Tuesday, everybody. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne. That he's talking about, guys, like they came out unscathed yesterday. It is kind of funny, Seth. Big crowd out here yesterday, capacity crowd. There were people waiting to get into the bleachers halfway through practice, still waiting just to get a seat to watch this team. And I do think it's funny how kind of educated the crowd has gotten to padded practices out of training camp. Like that, when somebody does actually go to the ground, there's a there's a noticeable whoa.
Hey, tempo violation.
That's exactly
that's
right.
That's what we call in the business, Sean, a tempo violation.
Yeah.
And but it's okay. It's okay if somebody goes to the ground because you just thudded them up. It's not okay if you like thudded them up and then kept driving with
and
your legs.
Drag them down. Yeah.
It's one of the hardest parts for rookies to figure out as you're trying to make the squad is just like how to go at the right tempo because you want to be competitive but also stay up. That's a really hard thing. It struck me, as DeMeco was saying that yesterday, I had just watched some video of an adult tiger playing with puppies. Mm. And they were friends. You know, like this was a pet tiger or something. And, maybe later on it mauled them or something. But I'm always intrigued by the fact that baby animals and animals even across species will have a good feel for just how hard they can play. You know, you don't want to injure the other animal when you're playing with it. You're just play fighting. Humans, as advanced as we are, we seem to lack some of that. Yes. And in football, especially when it's a competitive situation, as a rookie, like, man – you wanna do everything you can, but at the same time, you're also learning just where to dial it back, and it's tough because you're always just towing that line of aggression, but not being too aggressive.
Yeah,
someday we'll be as advanced as puppies and tigers.
Someday we hope to get on their level. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So the practice yesterday, especially on the heels of God, what day of the week is it? It was Monday yesterday. So Saturday's practice, which was a little more spirited than the walkthrough that took place the day before that, but there were no pads. The defense just absolutely wrecked the offense on Saturday. Yesterday was a lot more even. You know, if you're somebody coming out here, I think deep down most fans, when they come out here, want to see the offense. You know, they want to see some deep shots down the field. They want to see the offense move the ball, especially because the offense was the problem last year for this team.
Yeah.
But it's just so early in getting this offense installed that I've got sort of I'm grading it on a curve right now. But it was pretty even yesterday. And I would say this, that all three levels of the offense, first string, second string, third string. I don't know if the third string is significantly involved in the upcoming season. Something's gone horribly wrong. But especially, you know, CJ and Davis, the crews that they led, did some good things yesterday against this defense. I think it was the perfect amount of even yesterday between both sides. You saw enough good from both sides to feel overall good about the Houston Texans. So that was my overall scorecard takeaway was draw. Draw with a lean towards the defense.
I was doing, Cecil Shorts and I are doing a podcast this year, and we did our first episode yesterday, the Believe in Texans podcast. And it was cool because Cecil was one that actually made a good point about the offensive line. I was kind of nervous about just how the offensive line had looked leaky through no pads. And Cecil said, come on, Seth, you can't block anybody in no pads. And I'm like, all right, I'll give you that. That's true. It is really hard. But part of it with me is that last year we kind of heard some excuses put out by the O-line propaganda cabal about, well, hey, don't worry about it because in training camp it's hard to really play physical because you can't do everything as an offensive lineman that you would do in a game. Which is partially true, but it wasn't an excuse for what they were allowing last year.
Yeah.
So the fact that the offensive line and Nick Cayley and others have stressed the importance of having a physical attack this year, and on the offensive line, leaning into double teams, just playing old school physical football, I wanted to see that show up a little bit versus a really good defense. And
yeah.
I think it did make a difference. The offense looked better. If you're going to be that kind of an offense, it is a lot harder to look good in no pads. If what you're leaning on is the kind of stuff that really you got to practice at near full speed and with collisions, you're not going to really be able to do a lot of it without pads on.
Well, and when you're doing it, you know, like you said, you mentioned Nick Cayley's name, you're doing it with this offensive coordinator for the first time. There's nothing you're hearkening back on from seasons before with him.
I think it's also, so far, you know, Will Anderson, who'd been wrecking a lot of practices in the first week of camp with no pads on, it reminded me of the story he told on the Greenlight podcast last year about how he was basically banned from practice at times in high school because he would wreck the practice by just destroying everybody all the time. And I was starting to wonder, like, they might have to ban Will from a couple of these practices want the offense to come along.
I said that in my video on Saturday after that practice, after the practice where Daniil and Will were just wrecking everybody. I'm like, if the first string's going to get anything done. Now, it turns out you put pads on and you actually get a lot more done, so that's good. Here was D'Amico yesterday after practice. I've got a handful of observations here. Here was D'Amico. The first observation is pretty even, Steven, out here between both sides. Second one is about the offensive line. Before we get to it, here's D'Amico Ryans with his assessment of the offensive line in their first practice in pads.
By putting on the pads today, you did. I saw our O-line do a nice job of blocking the D-ends, D-tackles. They also did a great job of getting after them as well. It's going to be really great competition, right? Our O-line gets to go against one of the top D-lines in the league every single day. You get to go against the top guy, so everybody's going to get better from that. And so that's what I saw today.
This was the first practice, Seth, that I can recall where they kept the groupings consistent throughout the entire team periods. In the previous practices with no pads, by the second or third team period, 11-on-11, they were shuffling guys. There was no distinction of first string or second string with most guys. You know, Titus was with the same guys, it's, you know, he can tell Titus Howard's going to be the right guard of this team. Other than that, through the first four or five practices, you couldn't really tell. I guess through the first four practices. Yesterday, the first string was consistent throughout the team periods, and it was Cam Robinson left to right. It was Cam Robinson, Lakin Tomlinson, Jarrett Patterson at center, Titus at right guard, and then Ariante Ursary, which I think if there's a battle along the offensive line that people are most interested in, it's second-year Blake Fisher, who got some run last year as a starting right tackle, going against Ariante Ursary. Now, we'll see today. Maybe they're doing it by practice. They're not doing it by shift within a practice. So maybe Fisher is out there with the ones today. But for the first padded practice, Ariante Ursary was with the ones at right tackle.
I think that there's a very good chance that is what they do, that they just stay with one lineup for one practice or a couple practices and then try something else different. But it is telling that Ariante Ursary is getting this many opportunities, and that they're putting him out there. They're kind of throwing him into the fire and seeing how he does. I mean, he looks the part, man. He is a large hulking human being,
no doubt,
who moves really, really well, and he used his hands really well in college. A lot of the things that when you watch him and you think, okay, how quickly can he transition to the NFL? He did a lot of things in college that are pro ready. Yeah. And he's still got to learn a lot, but he also you can't teach height and width. Sometimes you can train your body and you can get more muscular, but there's just the simple geometry of it. Sometimes that these massively large offensive tackles, if they can move really well and they use good technique, you're ahead of the curve. You're ahead of the curve, and he's got all those physical traits.
That'll be something to keep an eye on today. Do they change up the combos on the offensive line at all? Blake Fisher running with the twos yesterday. Juice Scruggs not running with either combination of the ones or the twos. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. Juice might be on the fringe here with this team. Number three, they got some good red zone work in yesterday. C.J. Stroud, nice slant route over the middle to Jaden Higgins for a touchdown. There was a touchdown to Dalton Schultz that was making the rounds on social media yesterday. Just C.J. dropping a dime in the back corner of the end zone to Dalton Schultz. Davis Mills had another really good practice yesterday. He had John Metchie for a touchdown in the red zone work. Davis Mills, even in the non-red zone stuff and just the regular team drills between the 20s, Davis has had a really good camp. So obviously there's no quarterback controversy with this team, but your backup looks pretty good so far in case you ever need to use him.
And, you know, Davis is getting into that that role now where, because he's worked with so many different offensive coordinators, he becomes that much more valuable as a potential backup or bridge quarterback. And it makes him valuable to the Texans, too, that he's had to learn multiple new schemes with different offensive coordinators. And he should, you know, no matter what his ceiling actually is, it stands to reason that he should be coming into his own in terms of just whatever version of quarterback he is. You draft Graham Mertz and maybe he develops. So now you've got either the potential for a trade with Davis Mills, or if C.J. Stroud gets injured, maybe you feel a little bit better about that. In the passing game, the biggest thing, and I talked with Cecil about this yesterday too, is, my God, I mean, there were no hot routes last year. So when it came to C.J. getting blitzed, there were times where he just had no options for it. This offense is going to have hot routes. They're going to have options for when CJ gets blitzed. And that's where it's the timing and the communication between him and the receivers, hopefully they're well on their way to developing that.
Yeah, the number four, Mertz, you mentioned Mertz. He and Jalen Knoll had the play of the day yesterday, just about a 40-yard bomb that Mertz just dropped right in the bucket to Knoll, who got him behind the defense. Mertz isn't going to factor in this year, we hope, just because of where he is on the depth chart. Then you got big problems. But Knoll is going to. He had a really good he's had some really good practices out here. Jalen Knoll, who missed all of minicamp because of a hamstring, he's looked really good. The two rookies both have.
Mertz I'm having a hard time with, just because every time I see it, like, I'm looking at it in the show prep, and it reminds me too much of Nick Hurts. So I'm trying to separate Nick Hurts from Graham Mertz in my mind, because I hate him right now.
I don't blame you.
I'm not all that fond of a car rental company either right this moment.
All right, we're off and running on a Tuesday. Nick Caserio joins us in about an hour at about 7:15. So we got to four of the five things. The fifth thing was a quote from Sheldon Rankins that we'll play in the next segment. I do want to get to the Astros as well, who finally did something they haven't done in 19 games. But they did something they've been doing way too much of lately, too, which is losing baseball games. So we'll get to that in the next segment. Again, Nick Caserio at 7:15 on the show. We'll do headlines at 6:45. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast live from Texans training camp.
Got him to end the game. Astros have lost five in a row for the first time this year, all coming on this homestand, all coming against teams at the bottom of their division. The Astros now 0-5 against the A's and the Washington Nationals as they lose tonight by the score of 2-1.
Yeah, man, we pitched really, really well today. Framber was outstanding. Our bullpen did a nice job. 19 punch-outs. Really good job. Really, really good job by our pitching.
All right, that was Joe Espada after the game, trying to keep a happy face on what's been a very sad stretch of baseball for the Houston Astros. Swept in grand fashion by the Oakland, well, Sacramento, well, just the A's, over the weekend. Outscored 32-7. Last night, a much closer baseball game. They actually scored first, which they have not done since July 4th. Literally had not done it in 18 straight games. The other team had scored first, which will be one of the more remarkable underrated streaks of something happening in baseball that I've ever seen in my whole life. But they scored first yesterday, got the Bronx cheer from everybody in the stands at Daikin Park, and then they promptly cough up the lead the very next inning. Seth, on a hit that Framber Valdez, according to Matt Kawahara's article in the Chronicle, not happy with the strategy on the hit that tied the game, the positioning in the outfield. Framber Valdez, the right field, I think it was Trammell playing right field.
It was Trammell.
Skewed yeah. way into, like, way towards center field. Christian Walker is playing along the line to prevent a double, and I forget who the hitter was, but hit it right in that
low.
In-between.
It was low.
It was low, yeah, right in that in-between area there, and it turned into a game-tying hit, and Framber said this through his interpreter after the game: it doesn't make sense that that was a double. It doesn't make sense that the right fielder was playing center field with a lefty that was hitting. That should have been a single. That shouldn't have been a double, and the runner should have been at third and not at home. So I felt a little bit uncomfortable about that.
Yeah, the thing about that is, you know, Matt Kawahara did a good job of putting up the spray chart of Nathaniel Lowe and Framber's tendencies, and that the where Trammell was positioned, it probably makes the most sense. Listen, I know somebody out there is saying, like, oh, yeah, you know baseball better than Framber. No, I don't. But I think that the Astros coaching staff and their analytics people understand it better than I do as well. And it makes sense that he was positioned where he was. I was kind of surprised that Framber would just pretty much call out coaching there. It wasn't like Trammell made a mistake or anything. He was positioned where he was supposed to be positioned. And that was the numbers say that both versus Framber and versus Nathaniel Lowe himself against lefties, that's probably where he should have been. And it was Framber's upset. Goes seven innings, has a great performance, and it's all for naught because they've got a bunch of AAA dudes out there.
Yeah, they just can't hit right now. So that's, the Astros don't do anything without purpose. You know, there's nothing random about where people were positioned at that juncture in a baseball game. So there's a reason behind it. I get it. Framber's easily frustrated too, so there is that. And that's even amidst all this failure that we've had over the last week, that is the first time in 13 starts that the Astros have lost a Framber Valdez started game, which is almost as remarkable a streak as this 18 straight games where they haven't scored first. Like when Framber takes a mound, they win. And so that's the tricky thing about last night, is that you're not playing good baseball right now. Now, Jeremy Peña might be coming back pretty soon. The reinforcements might be coming in pretty soon. The entire weekend of baseball in Sugar Land is all going to be guys who were hoping to come back up and pitch for this team. Eric Geddy is getting moved up to Sugar Land. J.P. France is getting moved up to Sugar Land. Luis Garcia is getting moved up to Sugar Land. Christian Javier's already at Sugar Land. So this looks like the 2023 Astros in some ways with all the guys they have going there. Jeremy Peña is supposed to play in Sugar Land tonight. If I had to guess, that would be the closest one. That'll be the first guy we get back will be Jeremy Peña. If he's playing actual baseball tonight, my guess is he just needs to shake off some rust and then he's back up here, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I look, and I know that there's trade speculation heating up about Framber Valdez, and it's not really super clear who genuinely is and is not available right now. But the thing you got to remember is, as as bad as this team has looked in losing, is it 13 of their last 17? Is that what you said?
12 losses in 17 games. Yeah.
12 losses in 17 games. They're still profiled like a team that can win the World Series.
Yeah.
They're leading the division. They're not, unless it's some deal for active players, major league players, and those are hard to come by. There's no part of me that wants to abandon the hope of winning a World Series this year, because when you factor in all the guys coming back from the IL, theoretically, and that's assuming that 10 more guys don't go on the IL,
yeah,
as 10 guys come back from the IL, it's a World Series caliber team.
It is.
I know it doesn't feel like the 2019 Astros or the 2022 Astros, but compared to some recent World Series champions, they profile like a team that can win the World Series.
100%. It's interesting because I don't think they're going to trade for Amber Valdez. The deadline, by the way, is this Thursday at 5 o'clock Central Time, 5 o'clock p.m. Central Time. It is interesting, though, Seth, depending on the phone calls that they're getting, Framber would be a premier deadline pickup for a team. Like, he would command even as a rental, he would command a pretty heavy prospect price, I would imagine, at least three prospects probably. And it's funny, if you, depending on what prism you're looking at it through, like, in a way, keeping Framber Valdez is like making a deadline trade for the Astros, just because of the opportunity cost. Because of the opportunity cost of not picking up those prospects.
I'm bending my brain all different ways to try to explain, because I actually feel this way, that these guys coming back from the IL, that's your trade acquisition right there. I mean, to look at it as objectively as possible, in a simple way, the Astros right now are tied for fourth in odds to win the World Series.
Like, yeah,
they're very much in the conversation. As morose as we are about the recent stretch, it makes perfect sense when you look at it on paper. Of course. If they could be a 500 team when, with all of the things that have gone wrong ever since Jordan went out, then once guys come back injured, you've got that much better of a chance. So I don't want to lose Framber. I know they're probably going to lose Framber next year anyway. I get it. And yet, you can't just assume that every single year you're going to have a crack at the playoffs or winning a World Series.
No. It would be completely against character for the team to do it in season like this. Now, the other one that's interesting, and I've talked to multiple people and heard stories all over the map, but have you seen any of this speculation about Carlos Correa? One team he would waive his no-trade clause for would be to come back to Houston. I want no part of that. I want... unless Minnesota is paying a major part of the contract. Now, if you did make that deal, Carlos slides in there at third base in place of Paredes. So this Paredes injury sounds like it could be season-ending. The Astros, who usually err to the side of optimism on injuries, are actually pessimistic about Paredes, which makes me feel like he might lose the leg altogether, like that they're pessimistic.
I don't know.
It
makes me feel like he's going to come back and play at an MVP clip.
Because they're just wrong all the time?
They're wrong all the time. It's like opposite George. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The Correa rumors, that's just a non-starter for me. You know, with the 3 years left on his deal after this year at $30 million, he's not been good this year. I think Carlos is a super talented guy who the back of the baseball card has never really synced up with the talent level on a consistent basis. He had that near MVP year in 2021. And then he kind of backtracks, and then he's an all-star again in 2023. This year he's had the worst year of his career. So at that price tag, I don't want any part of that. I don't think you'd have to give up a ton to get him, because if he's even on the block, it's because Minnesota, you know, who's more of a penny-pinching team than the Astros are, they may just want out from underneath that contract and just kind of move on. They're not a contender this year. They might be more inclined to start rebuilding with younger players instead of $30 million shortstops.
So Correa comes in and plays third base?
For the rest of this year, if they traded for him, he would. Yeah.
Yeah,
because Payne is your shortstop. you know, that's what I was saying.
I'm just checking. I don't know if Prince Carlos would jibe with that.
I think you would check with him before. You make the deal. Obviously.
No, you definitely check with him. I mean, yeah. I guess that's what I'm asking. Is like, okay, so Cray is going to be cool with going to third base? You think?
Or if he's such a leader, if he's the guy that's if he's such a big leader, then he would accept a role like that. Yes.
Well, I know there was another great leader for the for the Yankees back in the day who decided that the better shortstop should play third base. You know,
instead of Derek Jeter.
Jeter was like, I'm the captain. Oh, I don't know, but I don't care what's best for the team. I'm going to
Carlos is an A-Rod guy. Remember, they're buddies. Yeah. They had the same agent for a little while. So that's.
And A-Rod was cool with going to third. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So there you go. There's your Astros update. They lose again last night. Sheldon Rankin's met with the media yesterday. He was good. Very first question right out of the chute. I love this. This is my favorite answer of any of the press conferences yesterday. Sheldon Rankin's on the Texans' culture compared to 2023. What's different now with this team compared to 2023 when you were here the first time?
The culture's set now. You know, obviously, you know, new coach comes in, you know, working overtime to try to get his identity imprinted within the framework of the team and, getting the team to function without him having to, you know, say every little thing over and over again. So I think, you know, obviously coming back, you know, same quarterback leading the team and then defense, you know, a lot of continuity. His culture is set, you know, so I think, you know, it was easy to kind of get back in here and honestly kind of feel my role like I did last time and then and just get back to playing ball.
The two teams that I think of immediately when Sheldon Rankin's was talking about that was the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens. And I think the Baltimore Ravens especially, because this spans a couple of different head coaches now, and they still have a lot of that. I think the Steelers have lost a little bit of that culture they used to have back in the day where the Ravens still very much have it, is that it can become a generational thing when you establish a certain type of mentality. That and the stories I would hear about Baltimore back when I was a player, I think are still consistent and true, is that there's just a certain kind of tight-knittedness and a certain standard and expectation that you just feel it when you walk in the door. Yeah. The Astros, I think, in a lot of ways have a similar type of enduring culture that pays dividends no matter who the coach is. I think that D'Amico and Nick have done a really good job of getting the kinds of guys in who care about stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And once you get to a point where the players can police it, it's a really good place to be in. I remember when Kubiak came in, I remember him talking about that the first year he was a coach, was talking about how important that is to get to a point, you know, and he was coming out of Denver where they'd been good for a long time, get to a point where the players are the guys who police all that stuff. And the head coach doesn't really have to concern himself on a day-to-day basis with setting the culture or anything, because it's there and there's a standard and that's all there is to it.
Yeah, I think it's you can feel the seeds of that having been planted already. Like, you can feel them sprouting, actually. You can see it with the team, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You can tell just because there's very little drama surrounding this team. I think there's always a drama quotient that comes with teams that don't police that stuff very well.
Yeah.
Eventually, there's got to be big-time winning that goes with it. Eventually, you've got to win. You know, the thing that the Astros and the Ravens have in common, the Ravens not so much recently, but I feel like once you win a couple Super Bowls, it doesn't matter that it was 8 to 10 years ago. Like, it's just there is that gene with the franchise.
They're consistently competitive.
And they, yes. You know,
they don't have
they're
bad
never
years.
Bad.
They haven't reached the pinnacle, but they don't have bad years, and then they've got a lot of really good regular seasons at least.
Yep. Yep. And so I think, you know, two seasons back to back 10-7, you can kind of feel that the trajectory is you know, two years back to back 10-7, winning the division. Really, you're clearly the best team in your division, and you've got the head coach and the quarterback. Like, all the foundational things that you need, you've got right now.
They have it except for the culture on offense, and I think they're on their way to having it finally. Yeah. It's been a slower onboarding for the offense, and I think they did some things in the offseason to try to counteract that. I think they had guys on the offense that maybe didn't fit. A couple years ago, D'Amico comes in, and there were guys on the offensive and defensive side of the ball that didn't necessarily fit with the way he wanted his football team to look like, and he got to work on the defense in quick order. The offense, it's been a little bit slower. But I think by virtue of just some of the guys they've drafted, I think they're drafting the right kinds of guys.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. We'll ask Nick Caserio about that. Nick's going to join us out here at 7:15 today. We've got a nice, we'll have a nice long conversation with Nick. We've got him for about 40 minutes, no commercials, starting at 7:15 on the show today. So give yourself a reminder there to be tuned in here to Sports Radio 610. We'll ask Nick about that and a whole bunch of other things. We've got some headlines we've got to get to coming up next. We'll do that. And then top of the hour, we will get into D'Amico Ryan's a little bit chippy about the national media yesterday in his press conference on some of the reporting. Who's right on this one, the national media or D'Amico Ryan's? We'll have that at 7 o'clock. Nick Caserio at 7:15. A busy Tuesday here at day six of training camp. Stay tuned. That's stay tuned at Sports Radio 610. Stay there.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, emerging live from a raucous day six of training camp. The music's already playing behind us here. Fans are going to be coming in today. Just nice stretch of fan open practices we've got coming up this week. This time next week we'll be in West Virginia covering the Texans there as they continue with training camp leading up to the first preseason game in Minnesota on August the 9th. You can hear all of it right here on Sports Radio 610. Nick Caserio joining us in about 30 minutes on the show. Texans executive vice president and general manager. Training camp yesterday, the first padded practice for the Houston Texans, and it was lively for sure. Here is D'Amico Ryan's. I know one player that a lot of you are asking questions about is running back Nick Chubb, who with Joe Mixon and Damian Pierce both out injured, he's getting the reps with the ones. Jawar Jordan getting a ton of reps with the twos right now. Jawar Jordan, of course, a sixth-round pick a year ago. Here was D'Amico Ryan's on what he's seen out of Nick Chubb thus far in camp.
Yeah, when it comes to Chubb and how am I comparing him, you know, guy's age, he's been through a lot. You know, it's not always going to be the same as his early years in the NFL. But what I hang my hat on with him is just, this guy loves football. He's physical. He plays the right way. He prepares himself the right way. Really sharp guy when it comes to the protection scheme. He's on it. He's helping out the guys. Coach Danny Barrett is doing a great job of bringing him along, getting caught up to our scheme. And so, seeing him today, he definitely showed up in the pass today. A guy who can play physical behind his pass. He can eat out yardage. So I'm excited to see him just play football. And that's what he's always been. He's always been a tremendous, football player, especially when he's healthy. So he's still working his way back. And it looks like he's in really good shape, and he'll continue to get better. Now going through camp, everybody continues to get better the more you go through it, and I see the same, with Chubb.
Okay, the key there, I think, Seth, he says he's working his way back still. Yeah, he's working his way back.
When he opens up with basically, I don't want to mischaracterize what he said, but it sounded to me like, don't get your hopes up in terms of seeing classic Nick Chubb. Yeah. Maybe that's a little too aggressive, but that he's an aging running back who's coming off of a catastrophic knee injury 2 years ago, and it's going to take some time to come back. The part about the pass protection is, I think, probably one of the most underrated things that coaches really care about that fans don't, but that really, really matters. And if you go back to that Kansas City game last year, of all the things going wrong with the pass protection in the fourth quarter of the playoff game, the running backs were not great in pass protection either. It wasn't just the offensive line. It wasn't just the tight ends. The running backs were having a really hard time too. So I could see that being a factor depending on how Nick Chubb, how good he is as an actual runner. Obviously, you can't keep him just for the pass protection.
Yep.
But I think there's a level of dependability there that D'Amico probably really likes. The contract tells you everything you need to know about Nick Chubb. He's got a $2.5 million contract. Like there wasn't a fervor of enthusiasm for him coming back from this injury around the league.
D'Amico to me described a right in that cut was describing a guy who is a dependable veteran backup running back that you can count on in a pinch. That's not going to get your quarterback killed. That's what he was describing right there, and I think that's probably what that might be what the ceiling is for Nick Chubb right now. I mean, he's running with the ones because your top two guys that you had last year are both out right now, and he's Nick Chubb, so he's getting the. Yeah. I think there's a respect factor there. He had a couple runs yesterday, and it didn't look bad. It didn't look great. You're in pads, and there's really very few plays where guys are breaking into the open field in padded practices at training camp.
But if you're also, if you were to go out to camp and see a running back number 21 out there and you didn't know it was Nick Chubb, he probably wouldn't be catching your eye either.
If right,
you're trying
correct.
To just look at it, if you're looking at it completely objectively, if yes. you didn't know any of the names of any of the players, he's not one of the guys you would single out.
I would take it a step further and say, okay, well, Juwan Jordan actually does sizzle a little bit in an environment yeah. like this. He had some nice runs. Yeah, and Woody Marks too is popping a little bit. So something to keep an eye on. It's you know it's still not even August yet, so we'll see how this all plays out. Let's flip over to the Astros here real quick. The Astros lose last night 2-1 to the Washington Nationals. That's now five games they've lost on this homestand in a row, swept by the A's over the weekend, and now the Nationals get the first of these three games they're going to play at Daikin Park. The offense, again, the story, they just can't score runs. They scored 7 in 4 games against the A's last night. Anemic. It wasn't even one of those games, Seth, where they left a bunch of guys on base throughout the game. They just couldn't hit last night. Here was Joe Espada on the offense and where they are right now.
No, we just, you know, we got people on base. We just got to be able to get that big hit. And, you know, teams go through scuffles like this during the season. It goes through, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks where you feel like you can't get a knock with people on base. I think we're right there in the middle of that. We just got to fight through it. Continue to get people on base. Continue to have this mentality of, like, you know, I don't need to be do it all on one swing. Let's just pass the baton and let the next guy pick me up.
Okay, a couple things. One, you put 6 guys on base last night. You had 4 hits and 2 walks. So this was not one of those games where you put guys on base and you just couldn't come up with a big hit. You couldn't get guys on base. That part there where, like, hey, we don't have to do this all in one swing. You're not capable of doing it all in one swing right now. This is a team that has a very high batting average and a very low slugging relatively. For a team with such a high batting average, they have a low slugging. They don't score runs. For a team that's bad, they're second in the league in batting average. They don't score runs for a team that's that good hitting.
They're second in the league in batting average and 18th in runs. And
right.
they were actually above average from the time that Yordan went out up until a few days ago, and it's just it was a little bit of a fever dream. You just can't you look at it on paper and you see guys' historical performances that you're not going to be able to sustain it. And it's really a matter of, man, limiting the bleeding until you get some of the actual dudes back. If and when Paredes comes back, but at the very least when Peña comes back and hopefully Yordan.
Yeah, hopefully Yordan. Yeah, there's a lot of injury news with this team yesterday. Boy, when they send out their summary of the injury news, you gotta go get a drink and get comfortable because it is a lot of names. But the good news is Arrigetti, Garcia, France all headed up to Sugar Land this week to join Christian Javier. So you've got 4 guys who have started important games for you all at Sugar Land over the last couple years, all going to be at Sugar Land over the next few days. Jeremy Peña also will be in Sugar Land tonight. If you go to Sugar Land, if you go to Constellation Field, you're practically getting an Astros game. I mean, it's if there's that many guys, it feels like. So that's the good news. Yordan is still going through a hitting progression, whatever that means. Jake Myers is rehabbing in Houston. I don't think we're going to see him anytime soon. Lance McCullers is playing catch. So you got that. He's got that blister problem right now. I don't know what McCullers is coming back to. If Arrigetti, Javier, Garcia, and J.P. France are all on the cusp of coming back, added to Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez.
Yeah.
I mean, Lance McCullers is not better than Colton Gordon right now. And you got all these guys coming back.
Lance is turning into that, like, one of those guys where it's always something. It's one thing when it's a major injury, but now all of a sudden it's a freak weight room accident.
Yeah.
It's a blister. It's all of these other little things that are becoming annoying.
All right, continuing with NFL news, the Titans cut Treylon Burks yesterday. He was the wide receiver they drafted with the first-round pick that they got for A.J. Brown. Safe to say that did not work out very well for the Tennessee Titans. The other bit of news in the NFL yesterday that's gotten a lot of traction was Christian Wilkins. We talked about him earlier this week. It was either earlier this week or late last week. Whenever he got cut, Christian Wilkins getting cut by the Raiders 1 year into a 4-year, $110 million deal. There's going to be a legal battle over the guaranteed money. We know that. The reports were he was getting cut because of how he was handling the rehab of his foot injury. Come to find out that there's stuff going on behind the scenes. Here was Adam Schefter yesterday on the Pat McAfee show describing an incident behind the scenes that was described by sources as a very weird thing that contributed to Christian Wilkins' departure from the Raiders.
What everybody's dancing around and tiptoeing around is the fact that when you speak to people there inside the locker room, they say that Christian playfully went to kiss a teammate on top of his head, and those same people said that that player took offense to it. So that's what everybody's been dancing around and tap dancing around, an incident in the locker room where he allegedly playfully kissed a teammate on top of his head. That teammate felt offended by it. And that's what a lot of this talk and speculation that people have just been floating around out there is about.
Okay, so he kissed a teammate on the forehead in a playful manner. Teammate said, nope, not doing that, and went to H&R and reported this entire thing, basically, is what happened.
I think that's probably a fair and accurate way of saying things, yeah.
I just had to get McAfee in there calling HR, H&R.
He went to H&R Block. They've got branches at the mall. That's what he did.
Yes.
And there's speculation or other stories floating around. You have to remember that this the way that Schefter frames it, it sounds almost innocuous, or maybe just one guy was overly sensitive or something. You know, you could envision multiple different scenarios. You got to remember that Christian Wilkins has been caught on film, like, putting his finger in an opposing player's nether
buttocks
regions.
Area, yeah.
Buttocks
yeah.
area, been his, between his cheeks, like, while the guy's laying prostrate on the ground.
Yeah.
I think there's a boundaries issue, potentially. Yeah. But we know that he crosses the boundaries at times.
Indeed.
If it flows over into the locker room, then I could see that
I'm going to guess he's not going to become a Houston Texan. That's my guess. That's my hot take on that.
He's got issues if he's, you know, because this doesn't have to turn into anything like politically charged or anything. Whether it's a man, a woman, whoever, another human being, when you're touching them in places they don't want to be touched, it's frowned upon in society. Okay.
Yes.
Hey, but I'm rich. You used to could get away with that when you were rich. Okay, Christian, things have changed a little bit for the better. You can't
just because
you're rich, you can't go touching people wherever you want to touch them.
All right, D'Amico Ryans versus the national media when it comes to injury reporting. We've got that. Nick Caserio joins us in about 20 minutes live out here at Texans training camp. It's day 6. Stay there.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover nature's best with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app, and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
All right, Nick Caserio joining us at 7:15 on the show. Let's quick get to D'Amico Ryans. The Joe Mixon injury is probably the biggest national news coming out of Texans training camp. Ian Rappaport actually had a report on it over the weekend that indicated that it's going to be maybe all of training camp, that Joe Mixon will be reassessed before week one. I don't know that Rappaport's report was drastically different than what the initial expectations were for Mixon's injury. And I think this may be where some of the glitch is with D'Amico Ryans. And yet there's part of me that's like, okay, well, I don't mind Rappaport's report. Anyways, here's D'Amico Ryans yesterday on the Joe Mixon injury reports from national media.
Yeah, nothing's changed with Joe. Joe is still working, you know, in the background. I know we get reports about Joe. Nothing's changed. He's still working. Whenever it's time for Joe to be back, he'll be back. Right? I know a lot of people want to report a lot of things about guys with injuries. My thing is this is, are you really concerned about our guys? Or are you really just trying to get something out there? Right? And for me, I always put my players' health and safety first and foremost. So I care about the guys, so you guys don't hear me talking a lot about injuries because that's their personal information. Guys are working through that, and it's nothing to report or get in an uproar about. Like, our guys are working, and it's always sensitive to me because I've been there. I've went through that. So it's not just to report something. Like, I want people here who truly care about our guys. I care about our guys and what they're doing throughout their process, and it'll continue to be that way.
This is, to me, Seth, this is a case of two things can be true. D'Amico can care about his players. D'Amico cannot want injury information out there. And yet it is the job of reporters to report things that they hear about injury, especially in the National Football League, with the one league that has to put out an injury report every week.
Yeah, that was the part that I was because I did in Rappaport's report and kind of wonder, all right, is this something he's just putting out there when things are a little bit slower or whatever, because it doesn't seem like it was groundbreaking or earth-shattering. Yeah, he's in a walking boot, and that Joe Mixon hasn't taken snaps in a preseason game in a long time anyway. So
yeah.
There's a little bit of a newsy element to that, but at the same time, I mean, it's not the reporter's job to care about the player or to be it's to report on things. And fans do, by and large, want to know this stuff, especially if you're an Astros fan, because you've seen how much injuries have affected the Astros right now, and a lot of Texans fans are Astros fans. The one thing that I might disagree with D'Amico on, that at least partly, is that from a player's perspective, there are times where it's frustrating that the team isn't filling people in on your injury, because people have a tendency to start questioning your toughness, or they make up stories in their own minds or on the message boards or what have you about what's going on. And that can be frustrating. When you've had setbacks, a lot of people in the fan base start speculating, like, well, what's going on with this guy anyway? I don't know if he wants it enough. And depending on how sensitive the player is, that can actually be just as or more stressful than when the team is divulging information.
Yeah, I think we've seen that with the Astros. You know, the Astros are the teams here in town. They're the ones that seem to be the glitchiest when it comes to reporting injuries, accurately forecasting injuries, at least publicly, to the fans and to the media, forecasting when guys are going to come back. And you're right, eventually the lightning rod in the whole thing winds up being the player, and the longer they're out, the bigger the lightning rod they become in that situation.
I played before fantasy became as big as it did, but there was still, it was starting to be, you know, guys would make those statements about, like, well, people, they only care about fantasy, but not about my actual injury. And when I was a player, I'd be like, yeah. Like, what's so hard to figure out about that? What? How disillusioned? Like, what were your illusions beforehand about the deep and genuine caring that you got from people in the sporting, or especially the betting public? Like,
well,
yeah,
the betting public, well,
the job, man.
And even the viewing public is, I think there's an element where players are just characters on a television show. You know, that's, you know, there's not an interpersonal element. Maybe there's a little more of a personal element now through social media. You see guys in their regular lives more and whatnot, but characters on a TV show is how I was looked at.
Yeah, there is. I mean, we've talked about this before. Like, so much of becoming a true veteran is understanding the difference between the movie version of the NFL or pro sports and the actual version. Yeah. And you got to get a lot of that crap out of your head, you know? Like to stop worrying about all this other stuff. It doesn't matter to your specific goals and objectives.
I just shifting gears real quick. Nick Caserio is going to join us out here in a few minutes. We're going to talk to him at 7:15. Okay, tell me if you think this feels like easy money to you. They put out, Jimmy Shapiro sent out an email, I think from Bet Online, one of the betting outlets, has a page where you can bet on divisional wins for each team. Obviously, each team has an opportunity to win six divisional games. The Texans' win total in division is 3.5. Can you, if they go, what type of scenario, barring injury, you know, like obviously if something happens to C.J. Stroud, 3-3 in the division is then very much in play. But assuming C.J. Stroud is healthy, what set of circumstances would the Texans have to endure to be a 500 team in the division, to go 3-3 in the division?
It's not all that bizarre or anything. I mean,
Cam Ward is really good, I guess.
When you talk about divisional games, that's three road games that you're playing.
Yeah.
And that just losing the turnover battle in a couple of games alone is going to could throw you that way. Were there, like, what was the highest division win total?
I think the highest one I saw was the Bills were 4.5. Something like that. Yeah. So, so it's not a drastically. Nobody had five because then you got to go undefeated in the division to get the over.
I'm not insulted by the number because it's such a small sample size and a weird bet. But I think the biggest thing is that people looking at it objectively look at the Texans' offense, and the offense wasn't good last year.
Yeah.
And then they got rid of Laremy Tunsil. So from the outside looking in without knowing all the dynamics, you're taking a bad offense. You've got a couple of rookie wide receivers that you feel good about that you added to him. So, like, we feel good about that here in Houston, but you really can't rely on rookie wide receivers until you see them. And the offensive line is, they made, from the outside looking in, they didn't really make any improvements to the offensive line on paper. So I get it. I get that part of it.
I'm going to bet it. Now, I'll remind you, they haven't lost a division road game since the Cully season. You know, they've been, we're coming up on four seasons, they haven't lost a road game in the division. That's with some bad Texan teams. It was just, 3.5 was jarring because I'm like, man, to lose this bet, they got to go 3-3 against the Colts, the Titans, and the Jags, who in every power ranking are all three in the bottom quarter of the league right now.
I mean, the Texans squeaked, the first game of the year, they squeaked one out versus the Colts. And they easily could have lost that.
They could have lost both Colts games.
And they got destroyed by physically destroyed by the Titans at home. So it's just it's not a freak set of circumstances to go even in the division.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Nick Caserio is going to join us live out here at Texans training camp after this break. We'll talk for about 40 minutes or so with the Texans GM, commercial free. We'll have a nice long conversation with him where we'll ask him about everything going on out here at training camp, how he feels the team is sitting in year three of the D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud era. We'll do all that coming up next.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover nature's best with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles, the hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility? Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
All right, there it is. You know when that music plays, what's about to happen. We are live at Texans training camp, day 6. We had padded practice yesterday. We're getting a padded practice today.
We are. Yes,
oh,
we are.
Yeah. Yes, there we go. That voice. You know that voice. Joining us here on Payne and Pendergast, Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager Nick Caserio joining us out here live right next to the practice field. Nick, it's great to see you.
Good morning. Great to see you. It's good to be here.
Good to be here. I'm going to ask this early. We're going to be going to West Virginia next week, getting in on Sunday. Will there be a SummerSlam watch party at the Greenbrier?
It's funny. I actually watched the tail end of Raw last night to see the card. So whether or not we make it to SummerSlam or watch SummerSlam, we'll see.
Okay.
But looks like it should be pretty exciting.
It'll be good.
Hopefully the weather holds off and not out there in a tornado or a rainstorm or anything
else. Yeah, for sure, for sure. Hey, so we just played in a segment or two ago. We played Sheldon Rankins yesterday, did media. And he was talking about – he was asked about comparing the team he was here with in 2023 to this team. And I loved his answer because he said, you know, the culture here now is set. DeMeco doesn't have to instruct us on every little thing. How are you feeling right now? Like year three of you and DeMeco together and CJ here, obviously. Is that an accurate assessment of where you guys are now culture-wise and everything compared to where it was 2 years ago?
Yeah, we're 3 years into the program now, and I think anytime you start something new or start something kind of the infantile stages, like that was DeMeco's first season, so really what he's trying to do is implement the foundation, the principles. Here's what it takes. Here's what we're looking for. Here's what we want. Make sure we get that message to the players, and ultimately it's about the players to implement that on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
And so now we have 2 years under our belt going into year three. Have a number of players that have been here in the system now for multiple years. Rank's a good example of a player who was here, left, now he came back. So I think the players have an understanding of what the expectation is on a day-to-day basis. And the best teams are usually the player-driven teams. Because
yeah.
In the end, you're relying on one another on a day-to-day basis and ultimately on Sundays for execution. So, you know, we feel like the program's in a pretty good spot. But what we try to do is each year we're starting over. And we kind of have to reestablish our level of performance on a lot of levels, top to bottom, which is what training camp is for.
You know, Daniel Jeremiah once, I remember hearing him talk about how amongst scouts, you can kind of start to get a feel for some of the teams and what types of players they look for, to where, you know, guys will look at a prospect and say, oh, yeah, that's a Ravens guy or that's a Steelers guy. Do you feel like you're starting to get a Texans type of guy?
Well, I think what you're noticing around sports is teams are prioritizing certain criteria. So whether it's in basketball, whether it's in baseball, and what you're trying to do is say, obviously the physical attributes, and they have to be able to go out there and perform their job, but there's also some intangible elements from a work ethic, from a mindset, from a competitive, from a toughness, what's required, what works in our building. We have to prioritize that because we feel that that gives us the best opportunity to put ourselves in the position to win. So I think what you're actually finding is more and more teams are looking for the same types of people with the same types of mindset. The systems are the systems. Certain players may fit a little bit better relative to what you're going to ask them to do. But from a consistency, from a dependability, from a reliability standpoint, those are the things that are going to win. So talent is important in this league. We've talked about this. I've mentioned on the show, talent is one component, but there's so many other factors that go into being a good football player, which I would say a good example when you look at somebody like Dare. So Dare is going into year 9 in his league. Is Dare the most talented player? Probably not. But is he consistent? Is he dependable? Does he execute his job, perform his job when he's asked? And I think he's shown the ability to do that for as long as he's been in the league. So he showed that in Tampa Bay. And then he's been here really since we first started the program in 2021. So what we tried to do, even on the front end before DeMeco was here, was prioritize those types of players. And our feeling was if we continue to fill the building with those players top to bottom, we're going to at least put ourselves in a better position to hopefully have sustainable success.
So when you talk about how a lot of teams are starting to look at the same types of things, I get the feeling that what you're saying is that there's less tolerance for bums than there used to be. or potential bums.
Well, it's not so much that. It's just when a player walks in a building, and you've been in plenty of locker rooms, so players are very smart, they're very perceptive. So if you're saying as a team, this is what's important to us, and a player is the antithesis of that because maybe he has some ability, then as a player, you're going to really question, are we staying consistent with really truly what we believe in, or are we taking a flyer because this guy has enough talent that, you know, we think is going to translate to winning? So, again, your tolerance is based on what do you are willing to accept on a day-to-day basis in your program. It doesn't mean that you're not going to take a risk. You maybe want to take a calculated risk on your terms, but hopefully the infrastructure that you have put in place can absorb that. And if it's not working out, our responsibility is to make a decision and to move on because we know ultimately where it's going to end up.
Yeah. One more on that, and then we'll get to training camp specific stuff. But I know you talk a lot after the draft about programs that players came from. The two Iowa State kids, you gushed about Matt Campbell. There's other coaches I'm sure you feel the same way. How critical is that when you're assessing players and bringing them in? How much does that factor in that it's a head coach and a program that you feel prepares them more for this type of environment?
You certainly put stock in that. When you look across the country, there's certain programs and coaches, and when you look at what Coach Ferentz has done at Iowa, I mean, look what Matt's done at Iowa State. I would say what Coach Lanning is doing at the University of Oregon right now. You have Kirby, Coach Saban. So when you have an understanding, Coach Fickell in Wisconsin, when you have an understanding of what they ask of the players on a day-to-day basis, then they're prepared to a certain level. Now, they still have to be able to replicate that in our level, in our locker room, in our team, and there's going to be an adjustment period because they have less distractions or their focus is more on football and not have to worry about going to class. But we're evaluating programs as much as we are evaluating the players. And we're of the belief that programs win. So whether it's in college or whether it's the NFL level, I mean, there's a reason that the same, I could say, handful of teams are in a position on a year-to-year basis because they have well-established programs. Doesn't mean there's not going to be some turnover.
Sure.
But programs matter, and then the people that are within those programs are ultimately going to define what that program looks like.
So is a big part of this process for you this year with Nick Haley, you know him from before, obviously, but not in this role necessarily and not on this team and everything else that's different. Are you still kind of getting to know this version of Nick Haley this year?
Yeah, there's always an adjustment period, and I think as you go through your career as a coach, you go from an assistant coach to a coordinator or a head coordinator to a head coach. So, and we've talked about this, where you've been is potentially has some impact of the imprint that you put on the program, but ultimately what you're trying to do is put together, in our case, the 2025 Houston Texans offense. So what does that look like? It goes back to who are the players, what can they do, can they actually perform the job and the tasks that are asked of them? Maybe there's some things that this player does a little better than others, then you use a little bit more of that. If a player is not as equipped to handle it, then you're maybe not going to put himself in that position. But I think all of us are going back to what I said a little bit earlier, trying to reestablish our level of performance. And in Nick's case, he's working through some things from a coordinator perspective. But ultimately, this is what training camp is about. It's about learning. It's about repetition. It's about making some mistakes. It's going back inside, maybe correcting, making some adjustments. So Nick's worked really hard. I think he's trying to put his stamp on the offense, and it's a collective effort from his position to the coordinators. The players all have input as well. So in the end, we're all going to rely on each other, and it's going to come down to how well we can execute in critical situations on Sundays.
We're joined by Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager Nick Caserio, live day six of Texans training camp. For us on the outside, Nick, one of the biggest storylines with this offense is C.J. Stroud, and how this year he's got more of a level of control, we would call it, line of scrimmage, whatever that may be. How is he doing with that so far, and what are your thoughts on that? You know, how big a difference is that for him this year?
Yeah, ultimately, the quarterback has his hand on the ball 99% of the time as you're getting Wildcat or something like that. So you want to have a certain level of autonomy, and ultimately you want to feel comfortable what's going on on your side of the ball and then have an understanding what's going on the other side of the ball. So let's say this particular system, it's kind of a quarterback-driven system, and it's really just about the communication. It's getting the information out to the people so that everybody's seeing the picture through the same lens. So the quarterback, when he has that, I would say, responsibility, he feels a little bit more, I would say, in control, and then he can make the decision, understand where the problems are. So it takes work. It's going to change kind of on a week-to-week basis. What are the issues? What do we have to deal with? But he's worked really hard. I think he's enjoyed that aspect of it, and it's only going to continue to grow and evolve as we work through camp and get into the regular season.
You know, Nick, one of the most surprising things I said to Sean, I don't think we even said it on air, but I was reading Bill Belichick's book, The Art of Winning, and I came in on a Monday, and before the show, I said, man, D'Amico and Belichick are so similar. And he looked at me like, what the hell are you talking about?
You're not wrong. I'm like,
no, they have, I mean, obviously they have much different personalities, but at the end of the day, I think that the one thing that really shone through as I was reading Belichick's book, and it's something that I already knew about D'Amico, is that I think they both either naturally or work really hard at just getting rid of the BS or the stuff that really doesn't matter and just zeroing in on the stuff that genuinely does have an impact on your team.
No, that's accurate. And you guys have had a perspective, D'Amico as a player, now as a coach. He's a no-nonsense, no BS guy. He's old school. Like that's what he believes in. That's how he was trained. He's the greatest person like in the history of the world. I mean, I've been on this show, talked about how much I love him, how great of a person that he is. His priorities are right, how important faith and family is. But when it comes to football, like, he has that trigger, he has that switch, and he doesn't really have a lot of time. But the reality is none of us have time for a bunch of things that aren't really impacting winning. So the quicker we can arrive at that point, the quicker everybody has an understanding of that. Winning is hard in this league, so what you're trying to do is minimize the things that aren't going to help you win and focus on the things that are that actually matter, which is work, which is intent, which is showing up on a day-to-day basis, which is being consistent, and just keeping your mouth shut and working. And that's how D'Amico was as a player. And he's not really operating that differently as a head coach than he did as a player. So he has that trigger. He has that switch. He's very invested in the process. And I think the players understand that. And, you know, it's exciting to be a part of that.
Different personality types, but you agree with Seth's assessment that the two are similar.
Yeah, Seth's right
ways.
About a lot of stuff. So in this particular case, I would agree.
Yeah. That's right, Sean. You hear that? It's going to be on my profile. Seth's right about a lot of stuff. Nick Passerio.
I'm going back through some podcasts today now. Yeah, I got to go back.
Well, hey, you know, while we're on the topic of Belichick's book, this is one thing I love to do when I read biographies or autobiographies of very successful people, is I try to pick out the advice that nobody's going to follow. Because there's always something that people want to follow the advice that's most convenient to them. And one of my favorite parts of that book was where he said that the four most important words for a leader to get really comfortable with are... He said it more colorfully than I'll say it. He used a different word, but I screwed that up. And how important it is to that he said, I screwed that up more than anybody else in the building. So guys can see that, yeah, take accountability for your mistakes. Doesn't mean that it's acceptable to make a mistake, but you got to take accountability for your mistakes, and I'm going to hold myself to the same standard as you.
No, I think that's the essence of leadership. All of us have to make a number of decisions on a day-to-day basis in our roles. Not every one of them is going to be right. And it's okay to admit, you know what, I was wrong about that. Or, you know what, I made a mistake, it's not good enough. And then just really work to get it fixed. So I think when you take accountability, individual accountability, hopefully people see that and respect that. And as long as it's done in a genuine fashion. Mm-hmm. So if you're wrong, don't be afraid to speak up and say, you know what, I'm wrong, I made a bad decision. Or, you know what, I don't know, let me go find out the information. There's a selfless nature to that, and it's okay to show, you know what, you're human, and we all make mistakes, and that's part of life, and that's part of growing up. So I think that's, you know, definitely a leadership trait or attribute that's important for people to possess. I mean, sometimes people act like they have all the answers, and they want you to know about that. I mean, you know, at some point, you're going to drown those people out and not want to listen to them. So, but it's interesting. It's an interesting observation. I'd say there's certainly a lot of validity to that, just, you know, from my perspective.
Nick Casario joining us here.
Did he say it less frequently than maybe he presented it in the book? Yeah. Did you not hear it from his mouth as often as maybe he claims?
No, he wasn't afraid to say, you know what, I screwed that up, and just work to get it fixed. And it just goes back to accountability. Yeah. So if you're holding yourself accountable, yep, then it's a lot easier to hold the rest of your staff and the team accountable as well.
Nick Casario joining us here live on Sports Radio 610. So as far as stuff out here at training camp, obviously a lot of eyes right now on Nick Chubb because Joe is out, DP is out as well, so Nick's getting a lot of run with the ones. I'm curious from, you know, he's coming off an injury a couple years ago, played some games last year, got injured at the end of last year. What type of data do you guys have when you're looking at him? I'm sure there's GPS trackers on everybody. Do you guys have sort of what the baseline was for him back when he was prior to the knee injury? And how are you able to kind of measure where he's at physically to help contribute to winning.
Yeah,
for you
that's
guys.
Interesting. You have a player's medical history of kind of what they have gone through, some of the different things that have happened. When they walk on campus, then we can kind of start our baseline understanding and do the testing. Where are they actually relative to their recovery? Is this an area that is too debilitating? It's going to affect their training. Do we have to modify their training? And then from a tracking standpoint with all players, we're just measuring their loads, their speeds, their physical imbalances, maybe one leg relative to the other, so it could impact their training. So we're looking at that across players. We understanding some players may be a little bit more at risk than others, just given their history.
Yeah.
But what we're trying to do is just take the information we receive on a day-to-day basis here, and then over the course of camp, look, if there's a day where we feel a player and maybe needs a little bit less because he's reached a certain threshold on his loads, then that's where I would say you're seeing more trends in the league in that respect. So relative to Nick, Nick's come in. He's worked hard. He's done what we've asked him to do. He's really spent the off season on his own training. I mean, I know there's a bunch of videos of him squatting like 4,000 pounds.
Yeah.
But like he's always been a strong player with a strong lower body. So once a player's here, we're actually able to measure that on a day-to-day basis and just try to figure out what's the best thing for the player. How do we keep them as healthy as possible? Understanding that, you know, we're not going to prevent everything, but there's a certain element of risk mitigation that's involved with every player, and we're certainly conscious of that.
Okay, real quick, Seth, to set the internet straight, just if Nick Chubb is squatting, I think it was 610 pounds.
Whatever it was.
It will, because it was a tribute to Sports Radio 610 is what I tweeted. He squatted six. So that's not necessarily – is that necessarily something that maps to what you guys are looking for in play? I mean, obviously it's impressive. I'm not trying
we
to
We actually
that.
Do a lot of single leg work.
Okay.
Yes.
I can speak from experience because I've been working with Mike Eubanks on Fridays and – doing some single leg RDLs, and really what you're trying to do is create balance, you know, because you might find if you're doing double legs, Seth probably can speak to this, but if you're doing double leg, sometimes maybe one side or one area supersedes the other and you is doing more work.
Yeah.
When you do single leg and you isolate, you kind of have a better idea. So Nick's very strong in his lower body, so I would say whatever the measurements are,
it's going to be good.
He's strong. It's going to be pretty good.
It's going to be good.
No. As a guy that went through multiple knee surgeries and injuries, that was one thing our old strength coach Dan Riley was big on, was that sometimes the training staff, you know, back in those days, they'd clear a guy for practice, but Dan Riley he liked to do single leg stuff with guys coming back from injuries, and the guy would be 20% weaker in the injured leg or the surgery leg, and it was frustrating for him. So he drilled that into my head over and over again. So I get excited when I hear people like you say that.
No, it's useful information. You can actually measure it. There's devices and technology that's available that can give you that information. And the good thing is you can show that to the player so they can see it. I think there was always when the whole data tracking technology came out, I think sometimes there was a negative viewpoint relative to players that were using it for, you know, non-competitive or non-positive reasons. But really what you're trying to do nowadays is show the player, look, here were your measurements, here's where your load, here's why we're training the way that we are. So they have an understanding of here's why we're doing what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So I think you've seen that kind of grow and evolve. There's definitely more trust on both sides. And we're not using it for anything other than what's in the best interest of the players. That's how we view it.
Sure.
Darrell Taylor intrigues me because I think, you know, you remember Jason Babin. Jason Babin was drafted by the Texans, and it was a little bit of I don't know if we were in the right scheme for him. And when he went off to Seattle and was able to put his hand in the dirt and be a 4-3 defensive end instead of a 3-4 outside linebacker, he really took off. And with Darrell Taylor, it might be a little bit of the opposite, where he did some really promising things early in his career, but in a different scheme in Seattle. And then last year was kind of a weird year in Chicago. But is there a part where maybe you look at Darrell Taylor and think this might be a better scheme fit for him?
Yeah, there's a good example of players played multiple systems. I would say Babin, going back to him, I think you're right about that. Like, he was better with his hand down. And anytime you're viewing end of the line of scrimmage players, some have the ability to play from a two-point stance and are comfortable. Some aren't as comfortable. Some are better with their hand in the ground playing from a three-point stance and really what you're asking them to do. I would say in Taylor's case, I mean, he has a lot of attributes that really translate over to our defense. I mean, he's an explosive kid. He's a good-sized kid. He's strong. He's got good get-off. He's got good bend. I mean, we feel that he's potentially going to be able to help our defense in some capacity. I would say, kind of complements Derek Barnett in some respects. I mean, they both play defensive end, but they're different in terms of their skill set and what they provide, but they're equally effective in their role. So DT's had a good attitude. He runs well. He's got some explosiveness to him. Looks like he might be able to provide some snaps in the kicking game, which really you're looking more from a size standpoint, not necessarily this guy is like a special teams maven, but it just creates a little bit more versatility to your overall team. But, you know, I think we were happy to be able to sign Taylor when we did, and because we think he's going to have a fit and a role in this defense.
Yeah, well, and obviously that's one of your strongest positions with Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter. Being out here at practice, those two have been wrecking shop at times out here. Does it make it difficult to assess sometimes when you're watching young tackles go against guys like Danielle Hunter? I mean, obviously it's great experience for them. They're going against the best. But as someone who's having to evaluate all this and put a depth chart together, how does that all factor in?
Yeah, it works both ways. I mean, we feel like we have pretty good players on both sides of the ball. I mean, arguably Danielle and Will are two of the better defensive ends in the league. So, I mean, they have to work on what they're doing as well. Like, we can't penalize them. So here's your assignment. Okay. The big thing for us is just making sure that you're staying off the quarterback. That's one of D'Amico's rules. I mean, this goes back to protecting the team. So just stay off the quarterback. If you win the rush, just go ahead and pull off. But from a working against one another standpoint, I mean, Ursary's going to get a lot better working against Danielle, working against Will, working against DB, working against Taylor. And that's going to hopefully make them a better player. So, yeah, I mean, Will's been having this problem probably since he's been in high school.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier in the show.
Will's a good player. And yeah, Will's actually improved in some areas, which is what you like to see in a younger player. But we're getting good work against one another, and there are plenty of times where our tackles have blocked the ends, and there's other times that the ends have beaten the tackles. And that's emblematic of the NFL and what you're going to see on a week-to-week basis.
Well, and I think emblematic of what we were talking about earlier in the conversation, the types of guys you're bringing in. I saw footage after practice the other day of Will working with Ariante after practice on, you know, whatever. Ariante, I'm sure, went up to Will and asked him and said, hey, let's do these things. How cool is that to see? And also, as it pertains to Will, like when you signed someone like Danielle Hunter, because those two are now inseparable, Danielle and Will, it looks like, out of practice. How much of that factors in when you're looking at something like a contract for Danielle and what it's going to cost? Do you look at, like, okay, not only is this guy a great player, but from what we know about him, there's an incremental effect he's going to have on the development of Will Anderson?
Yeah, look, we're trying to bring good
football. Am I overthinking?
No. We're trying to get good football players in the building. Yeah. And I would say in Danielle's case, I mean, we didn't have a history per se, but Chris Blanco was with him in Minnesota, so having that information. And then when the players walk in the building, really, you hope it's organic. Like, we're not going to force it. Well, we're signing Danielle because, Danielle, we want you to help Will.
Right.
If that works itself out that way, I think there's a mutual respect for one another because they have the right mindset, they have the right personality, and they want to help each other. And the reality is they can help each other by learning from one another and sharing information and making each other better. And that's really what we try to do. I mean, D'Amico talks about this a lot. I mean, I know it's just a phrase, but it's true. Iron sharpens iron. So, again, we're looking at the player, his overall background, his makeup, what can he do to help our football team, and when they're here, how those relationships form. Ultimately, it's up to the players, and you just hope it is organic as possible. You're not trying to force anything on anyone.
Yeah.
You know, we Sean and I were discussing during the break that Kalen Bullock almost had an interception yesterday, but he dropped it. And I was talking about my frustration at times because Kalen Bullock, he's got so many potential interceptions already early in his career. but to spin it in a positive way, we were talking about Jalen Knoll, because Jalen Knoll, you know, I know drop rate doesn't tell you everything, but just by drop rate, he improved a lot with his hands through his college career. And he went from pretty bad to last year having one of the best drop rates amongst drafted wide receivers. Is that something that you have a process for, or on an improving guy's hands, or is it as simple as just get out on the jugs machine?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you can improve someone's hands and just actual catching of the football. A lot of times, at least from a defensive back perspective, their ability to track and judge and find the ball when it's in flight, especially with their back to the ball, isn't as natural. I would say those couple plays in practice yesterday were plays that were actually Kalen was working downhill and he just dropped the ball, but there was a decent amount of steam on those. But going back to when we evaluated Kalen, like he was around the ball quite a bit at USC, and he was able to finish plays. So you have a lot of defensive backs who you can categorize them as interceptors, where they actually finish the play and get their hands on the ball, and then you have some other ones who are more PBU or just more passes defense. But your actual hands, and a lot of it is hand strength, so you can work on that and the jugs, but then a lot of it is catching and running and moving, which I would say the best drill at the combine to kind of simulate this is the gauntlet drill, because you're running full speed, you're running through the football. That simulates more of what actually happens during the course of the game. So every player's got to find – I mean, you know, Edelman used to catch – playing cards from the equipment manager just for hand-eye coordination, you know, in the morning to make him set. And Julian had good hands, but he had drops. So sometimes it's hand positioning. Sometimes it's just some are better playing the ball or tracking the ball on the move. So, but Kalen has shown the ability to find the ball, and a number of interceptions that he had last year were actually pretty difficult catches. You know, we feel that he's probably going to make more of those plays than he's not. We'd like to see him catch them, but there's plenty of things that you can do to improve just the actual catching of the football.
Yeah. Nick Caserio joining us here live on Sports Radio 610. We're at Texans training camp, day six. Nick, I know you like the investment community and you dabble in that a little bit. I'm thinking of buying some Cade Stover stock. Talk
How
me into it or out
of
it. Yeah.
A small cap, a blue chip,
you
or
tell us.
A mid cap. So
look good so far.
I think he's an IPO, hopefully, right?
No, yeah. I think there's too much volatility with the IPOs. Unfortunately, I've bought into one recently that I think it's gone down probably like $20, $30 since I bought it. So Hopefully that's not the case with
Can
Stover.
Can I interest you in this Cade Stover stock? You've already bought
some.
Yeah,
he's a little bit more of a steady, maybe a dividend, you know, income type of investment. But
what have you thought so far?
In all seriousness, Cade's worked really hard in the offseason. Cade's mindset and his mentality, he cares a lot about football. He's very competitive. He's very tough. He's very smart. And as a player who hasn't played the position for that long, it's only been a handful of years, so he continues to get better. You've seen some tangible improvements, and, you know, he's going from year one to year two. The hope is that younger players, you see a little bit of a growth or evolution, but you know, we're glad Cade's on the team. I know we talked about him when we drafted him, that we were excited to get him on the team. And he just keeps his mouth shut. He works very, very hard. He cares a lot about football. When he's not here, he's probably on his farm baling hay, and because that's the type of mentality that he possesses. But, you know, excited about where he is, and hopefully his trajectory continues to move ahead.
Nick, I'm going to ask a question of you that pretty much every single guy that steps up to the podium during training camp gets. What are you working to improve on in your game this year?
A lot. I'm always trying to improve and get better. I would say I think I've always kind of taken the approach, not get too high, not get too low, just kind of stay here because there's a lot of things that can happen. And continue to empower the group that we have in the building and give them opportunities, you know, whether it's in the scouting area or it's other areas that are overseeing other departments. So just being disciplined and diligent, and, you know, I try to stay hands off but pick my spots where appropriate. And just to continue to provide support to whomever needs into the building, and starting with D'Amico. And my job is to serve him and to serve the entire organization, and you just continue to do that on a consistent basis and try to make sure I stay on a leg day every Friday and make sure that I don't miss any of those workouts.
There you go.
Well, I want to make sure I maintain that level of performance.
It's interesting because D'Amico talked about how, you know, he needs to focus on developing coaches and not necessarily always being about the player development as heavily, but he's got to focus on developing coaches as well. Is that something that generally in your career, is that kind of a constant emphasis of always just, yeah, okay, I got to get to the point where I'm training the people. I mean, I'm training the people underneath me as much as getting my hands dirty.
No, it's interesting. I mean, every year it's a new year, and where you are in your individual evolution and development potentially could impact what your focus is on a day-to-day basis. So I think I've had the good fortune of being in multiple roles throughout my career, but I think the approach that we take, not only with the players, and D'Amico's talked about on the coaching front, but just all aspects of the organization, is bring people in, provide them the opportunity, and the mindset of draft and develop in all areas of the program is something that we're, I would say, focused on. And the more we can continue to do that, create more opportunities for other folks and just kind of nurture them along and steer them in the right direction, ultimately, that's my responsibility to the organization to hopefully position this group for a number of years to come.
Nick Caserio, Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager, joining us here live. Texans training camp, day six. Christian Harris was not on the PUP list. He wasn't on the NFI list either. He's on the roster. He hasn't practiced yet. What can you tell us about where he's at? We saw him jogging out here yesterday, so that was good.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this last Tuesday. There's a number of players that are at different stages in terms of their development relative to their health. I would say specifically in Christian's situation, the way the rules work with NFI, PUP, et cetera, if they're on one of those lists, there's certain parameters and limitations in terms of what they can participate in. So as a player makes progress, let's say you want to put him into a walkthrough in the evening or something like that, you just have the flexibility to do that. You're sort of keeping him alive. So you just – every case is a little bit different. So we're trying to do what we think is in the best interest of each individual player. So Christian's getting closer. He's starting to make some progress. So really, I would say that was more of a mechanical thing. Gotcha. There wasn't any funny business or anything like that. It's just trying to look at the situation. What do we think makes the most sense? You sometimes can keep a player a little bit more engaged when he's not on one of those lists for a myriad of reasons. So I'd say, again, there is a thought process and a rationale behind it. I'd say that's probably the best explanation for his situation.
Nick, one of the things that Sean and I talked about is sometimes when a guy is put in a leadership role or becomes the veteran guy or one of the veteran guys in a position group, you can see a change in them, and it affects their individual player, but they also grow as a leader. And it's been interesting to watch Titus Howard. So from the outside looking in this offseason, you know, and we're not there every day, but just from the things that he's said and the way it looks like he's operated, it looks like he's really leaning into or embracing becoming a veteran guy on the team and being a leader in that unit.
Yeah, Titus has been here for a number of years now, and honestly, he's probably seen as much change as anybody that's on the team. And, you know, to his credit, I mean, he's done a number of things that are very selfless. Like, we've asked him to change positions. He's played multiple spots. He really hasn't complained and bitched and moaned about it, so it kind of speaks to him. Titus is a good kid. He works hard. He's got a good attitude. There's been some ups and downs throughout the course of his career, but he continues to work, and he get better. You know, we're glad he's here, and, you know, he's played good football for us. And even going back to, you know, my first season in 21 when he had to go out there and play left tackle, you know, he showed the ability to do that. So, you know, Titus deserves a lot of credit. Hadn't been easy, but I think he's really made a conscious effort to sort of work through it and try to do the right things. And the big thing with any player, and Titus included, is continue to work, continue to make progress, continue to improve, and do what you can to help the football team. And, you know, he's certainly embraced that.
He's one of the few guys so far that hasn't really been, like, mixed and matched out of his right guard position. There's been a lot of shuffling, understandably, on the offensive line. It felt like yesterday you guys were going with specific combinations, you know, with different groups out there. Is that something we're going to continue to see, or is there still going to be shuffling? Not specific to Titus necessarily, but where are you at right now in that whole competition along the offensive
line? Yeah, at some point that will probably declare itself a little bit more. Probably once we get through another week here, and then maybe right before Minnesota or after Minnesota, somewhere in there. At some point, if we think this is what the group is going to be, then, all right, we're going to go ahead and let those guys work together as much as possible. The reality is we probably have 7 or 8 players that are going to factor in to the actual game day roster. Mm-hmm. So you just want to make sure that whoever those players are going to be, they get enough reps. But we've talked about this. We feel like we have a lot of depth and a lot of competition at multiple spots. Some of it's starting to declare itself a little bit. You know, we have, honestly, 4 or 5 starting tackles or, you know, starting level tackles. Blake Fisher, I know Trent's not practicing yet. Even if you were to take Titus out from guard and put him outside. So feel like we have decent depth there. And then inside, we have a number of players, some guys that are center only, some guys that are guard only, some multi-position players inside. So I think these next 2 to 3 weeks, we'll see a little bit more, and we'll have a better idea and better understanding. So really, at some point, all these guys are probably end up playing with one another. Yeah. Eventually, you want to get to the point where whoever the 5 are, from a communication standpoint, you want to be able to go out there and practice as much as possible in anticipation of being ready to go for the Rams.
I haven't adopted my undrafted rookie free agent yet. I'm going to wait until after the week that we're in West Virginia to do that. But are there any guys I should keep an eye on? Now, remind you, this isn't just overall ceiling or ability or anything, or even ability to make the team. It's like, okay, I love this kid and the way he works and practices and all that.
Yeah, I'm actually going to give you a twofer because they kind of travel in packs here a little bit. But Casey Osai and Jackson Woodard, from the time that they've really walked in the building, that they're as diligent and their work ethic and mindset is as good as anybody in the building. I mean, every night, at the end of the day, they're upstairs talking to Coach Ross, going through whatever the next special teams phase is, because they're in a position where if they're going to make the team, yeah, like they're probably going to have to make it in a kicking
smart
game. But their mentality, they're very consistent. And honestly, they're together all the time. So whether it's walkthrough, getting extra work with Coach Davis, spending time with Coach Ross. I know Jackson, we didn't sign him right away after the draft. He was released, then we claimed him. But it was right around kind of when a draft had taken place. But those two players, and we've asked them to do some different things that they aren't accustomed to doing. They've played some defensive ends. So the more that they can create some versatility for themselves, at least it's going to give them an opportunity to potentially put themselves in a position to make the team.
Okay, so Seth, jot those names down. I already got mine. You know who mine is. Mine is Daniel Jackson, the wide receiver. Because
he's probably going to SummerSlam, so
knowing him. Because you're doing bed checks at night at the Greenbrier. Where's Jackson? He's in MetLife Stadium. Because when they were doing the over the bridge question, they said, "What's your walkout music going to be?" And he said, "Randy Orton, Voices in My Head."
I hear voices, yeah.
And
he's going to change that to the Hulk music.
This guy's making the team, Nick, based on this.
Well, hopefully he can make a few more plays in practice.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, walk before we run. So, yeah, that's good. Have we found out who the wrestling fans are on the team?
Omar, that's your job.
That's Omar's. Omar's got to get me my list. Right. I want to do a little thing after practice in Greenbrier where I find out.
Maybe we can get some SummerSlam predictions while we're at it.
Oh, okay. Give me one.
It's Cena's last SummerSlam match, right?
Yeah.
So I know he's a big-time actor now. So
yes.
I'm sure, you know, eventually Cody's probably going to work himself.
It's him and Cody going against each other, right?
And then CM Punk against Gunther, right? I watched CM came out last night and had a good monologue.
A little shouting match with him.
CM Punk fan. So
Drew McIntyre's trapped over in England right now.
It sounds like it. So
you got to partner with your Cleveland guy, Logan Paul. Can you get to MetLife Stadium by Sunday night?
Yeah, I'd rather more partial to The Miz.
That's a Cleveland guy. All right, Nick, we appreciate you stopping out.
Yeah, you bet. Anytime. Yeah, appreciate you having us.
Yeah, good chat. And
Seth, good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. I'm going to do my deep dive on Casey Osai and Jackson Woodard.
Yeah. Casey Osai has
got a cult following amongst a few Texans fans, so they're going to be excited.
Oh, you'll get some hits on that Seth Payne YouTube channel,
there
baby.
You go.
Yep,
there
yep,
you
yep.
Go.
Good stuff. Hey, Nick,
thanks, fellas.
Yeah,
thank you. Thank you.
Great stuff. Executive Vice President and GM Nick Caserio joining us. We are done. We're out of time. We will be back here tomorrow at 6 a.m. for day 7 of training camp. And stay tuned all day long. Texans training camp live coming up next in the loop out here from 10 to 2.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable 6-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and 4 blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The wait is finally over. Ready or Not is available now on consoles. Become an elite SWAT commander and feel the weight of the badge. The immersive cult classic is now on its way to more players than ever before. Coming this summer for PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series XS. Get ready for 18 high-stakes missions, solo or with up to 5 players in co-op. Clear rooms, protect civilians, make split-second calls, and join the tactical shooter community. With countless ways to set up your loadouts and gear, no mission is the same. And with full crossplay,
your team can suit up no matter what system they're on. So, if you're into tactical gameplay and intense high-stakes action, Ready or Not is the must-play tax shooter this summer. Available now on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC.
Bitcoin might sound complicated, but the Gemini credit card makes it so simple. Use it like any credit card. Buy lunch, gas, or your weekly groceries, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight to your account. No annual fee. And right now, you can grab a $200 Bitcoin intro bonus. It's the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stash. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. Issued by WebBank, in order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.